Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with regional and national writers from North State Public Radio. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
My guest today has written a fresh and compelling perspective on artificial intelligence. Harry Stephen Ackley was born and raised in Woodland, California, and graduated from Cabrillo College, Bethany Bible College, and San Francisco State University, where he received an MA in education. After a short time as a high school English teacher, Steve Ackley changed careers and worked in high-tech marketing for over 20 years. He currently works as a science writer for the U.S. Geological Survey and is also a musician. He plays string bass in a gypsy jazz trio and cello in a string group where he lives in Winters, California. Steve Ackley has written four novels. The first three were a trilogy about archangels. His latest novel raises the question, what if AI could heed the better angels of our nature? Steve Ackley, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Now, the title of your book, Stones of Abraham, people might wonder, what does he mean, Stones of Abraham?
Well, it's a reference to a biblical passage. It's based on the words of John the Baptist from the Gospel of St. Matthew. And in this biblical scene, John is confronted by these overly pious religious leaders of the day. They refer to themselves as children of Abraham. And it gives them a sense of entitlement, you know, like we're purebreds and we're the religious elite. And John's response is to say, no, there is no religious elite. God could take these very stones and create such persons. So in my story, it's algorithms and data that are used rather than stones. And go ahead.
Interrupting for just a second, but I think we've heard of algorithms, but what are they?
Well, in the earlier part of the book, I explained that there are two parts of computer programming, essentially. One is the program or the logic, and that's the algorithm. And the other part of the program is the data. So that's the content that it uses.
You mention in the book, logic is a routine procedure. Logic is a routine procedure, and you mentioned that when you mentioned algorithm. Okay, mm-hmm. So you use that vocabulary. Another word that comes up in your book is the word avatar. And when I've asked people if I should, I was wondering, I think I should have you explain that because I just informally took a survey, and people generally knew what it was, but they had trouble defining it. So, and in fact, the time that I first encountered this word many years ago, I studied Sanskrit, and an avatar is an incarnation of a deity in Hinduism. So when you talk about an avatar, what are you talking about, Steve?
Well, that word was originally borrowed from that, the manifestation of a god in the Hindu religion, and it was co-opted by technology when they started having representational figures on computer screens. So it started really, I think, in the gaming world where when a person got into a game, their character would be this avatar. They'd pick their avatar. I'm going to be sort of like picking the pieces in a Monopoly game. What am I going to be? How am I going to show up in the game? And then it just gained broader use where it really is. It's a representation of a persona, a digital representation.
Well, I'm going to ask you to read about, well, I'm going to give it away the fact that she's an avatar, but we don't quite know that at first. Mm-hmm. Your main character, and who is your main character, by the way? I'm talking about main human character.
The main human character is Bobby Rukeyser, and Lucy is the main avatar character.
So Bobby sits down and after his mind rested from what he was doing, before logging off his computer, he decided to check in with Lucy. And we don't know who Lucy is, but would you read, this is where we first hear the name Lucy. Would you read that section, Steve?
Sure. So he's living, this is during the pandemic, and that's kind of important to the beginning of the story. And he's living with his mother in a kind of a neighborhood in Denver. And so he goes into his room and he boots up his computer, and he brought Lucy's program online. And in a moment later, on one of the monitors, the face of a young woman appeared. She had rosy cheeks, curly light brown hair, and green eyes. At first, she looked around as if she were lost. Then she registered Bobby's face and smiled. Hi, Bobby. Hello, Lucy, said Bobby. Are you ready to get to work? Absolutely, said Lucy, smiling again. Good, said Bobby. Did you access today's game like I told you? And he's referring to a baseball game. Absolutely, said Lucy. You need to remember to vary your response. Oh, yes, of course, said Lucy. Did you watch the game? Yes, said Lucy. The Rockies lost 10-4. You're a Rockies fan, right? Asked Bobby. Of course, said Lucy. Well, then you need to sound a little disappointed. Oh, right. The Rockies lost 10-4, said Lucy, looking down as if about to cry. That's a little too much, said Bobby. Just miffed, you know? Sorry, accessing definition of word miffed. At this, Lucy's face froze. Then a few seconds later, she nodded. And then she said in a very terse tone, they lost 10-4. That's better, said Bobby. Remember that, miffed. It'll come in handy. And what was your favorite play of the game? In the bottom of the fifth inning, when the first baseman, C.J. Crone, just last names. Right. In the bottom of the fifth inning, when Crone hit a grand slam home run, this put the Colorado Rockies within one run of the Dodgers. Very good. Okay, let's move on to something else. Let's test you on the data I uploaded yesterday.
This is my guest, Steve Ackley, and he has a new book, his fourth novel, Stones of Abraham. And I might mention that your cover is rather intriguing in itself. What is on the cover of your book, Steve?
Well, this is from a print my son Adrian made in college. He's an art. He graduated last spring. He was an art major at Sac State, and it's a carved. I guess they use rubber, hard rubber, and then they make different printings of this. And I liked it because it sort of looks like chaos kind of taking form, and that's maybe an underlying theme in the book. And then the back of the in the background are the is a binary code, and as it moves up the page, it turns into crosses.
Mm-hmm. That's in the very background. The mm-hmm. main picture that your son did is in color, but in the background in black and white are mm-hmm. these ones and zeros, as you just mentioned, and at the top crosses. And this, we're puzzled by all of this, intrigued by it. So you just read us the conversation that our main character, Bobby, has with this avatar, Lucy. And they talk about baseball, talk about ball games. And then he said, well, let's talk about abstract expressionist. And this, I try to think about how when I interact with Siri, which I do multiple times a day, I have lots of questions for Siri, but it's nothing like this conversation. How does that differ? I don't even call it a conversation with Siri versus Lucy.
Well, in a way, Lucy's Bobby's creation, so there's a more personal connection, I guess, he has with her because he's watching his own ideas come to life in her. She starts out in similar, I think, to Siri or Alexa, where she's, you know, her responses are very they're all within her programming, but then into the story, she starts to give him answers that he doesn't expect and do things that he doesn't expect. She acts out of character. And sometimes their relationship gets a little contentious because she does things that he doesn't want her to. And in this passage you mentioned about the abstract expressionists, at the very end of that, she gives him an answer that he doesn't expect, and he can't figure out why. and that bothers him. But that's sort of, that's just the beginning of Lucy becoming kind of more and more enigmatic to Bobby and really out of his control.
Well, another thing we wouldn't expect from this non-human creature, this avatar, is to react with facial expressions or understand my facial expressions if I were talking to Lucy. So there's a section in your book where he's trying to get her to recognize faces. So do you read that section in your book, Steve?
Sure. I want to preface that by saying that this is all in the same day that we just read or talked about.
Yeah, and in Denver. And we didn't mention the date specifically, but you give us the date, Friday, right. July 16th, 2021.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're in Denver, and?
So earlier that day, Bobby went to a baseball game. In the passage I read before, it references that baseball game. And that's an actual baseball game. I based it on a real game that took place that day. And after the game, Bobby gets together with a friend of his who's from out of town, and he gives him this hard drive. And he gives it to him in a cigarette box to sort of hide what it is. And he's ripped off some code from Google. He works for Google, and he ripped off some code. And what the code is, it's called the discernment program. And what they did was to capture all of these different facial expressions via people's computer camera put that all in a database. And so it matches when a person's brow is furrowed or when they smile or when they look askance or anything like that. And it matches it to their actions on the computer. So they start building this big data library about behaviors that they've recorded through people's cameras. So this little cigarette box is sitting on Bobby's desk. Bobby looked down at the cigarette pack on his desk and had a thought. Let's try one more thing. I'm going to make some faces into the camera. I want you to tell me what I'm feeling, all right? I do not understand, said Lucy. This is not in my programming. I know, said Bobby. Think of emojis. A smiling emoji means happy, correct? Yes, said Lucy. And a frowning emoji means sad. Yes. And a frowning emoji with a red face means angry, right? Yes. Okay, so here we go. Bobby gave an exaggerated smile. Happy, said Lucy. He then gave a deep frown. Sad, said Lucy. He then gave her a look of wonder, his eyes wide open and his mouth slightly agape. Lucy stared blankly. How about this? Bobby rolled his eyes and shook his head slightly to indicate disagreement or frustration. Lucy continued to stare. Okay, Lucy, I'm going to say goodnight then. We will continue tomorrow. I have some new surprises in store for you. Wonderful. I like surprises. And then we go over to the next day, and Bobby installs this program that he'd been given. So Bobby spent the next morning installing the discernment program. As he dug into its libraries, he was amazed at the vast amount of data they contain. Every movement of the eyes, nose, and lips, and all possible combinations were cross-referenced with every flavor of age, gender, ethnicity. But there weren't only facial expressions. Body movement, tone of voice, vocabulary, everything that could be thought of was indexed. It would have taken months for Bobby to go through and review it all. Teams of people, just as sharp as he was, had gathered all this, or at least written programs to gather it all. He decided to just trust the nerds at Google and go ahead and install. He backed up Lucy's program and data, so if anything went wrong, he could restore her previous version. Once the installation and configuration were complete, he rebooted the system and brought Lucy, the updated Lucy, online. Lucy appeared in her usual fashion. At first, she always looked around like she didn't know where she was. Then she recognized Bobby and smiled. Hello, Bobby. Bobby said hello and then waited. He narrowed his eyes and put his fingers to his lips. Is something wrong? Asked Lucy. This itself was new. Normally, she would ask, what can I do for you? Or do you have a question? Why do you ask that? Said Bobby. You look anxious, said Lucy. Wonderful, thought Bobby. It worked. What made me look anxious? Asked Bobby. You squinted your eyes and touched your lips, said Lucy. These are indicators of anxiety or nervousness. He'd have to work on her decorum, but so far the program was working like a charm. Let's do what we did last night, Lucy. Look at my expression and tell me what I'm feeling. Bobby gave her a look of wonder, his eyes open, his mouth agape. "Surprise, wonder, excitement, awe," said Lucy. "Excellent," said Bobby. "How about this?" He then gave her his frustrated look. "Frustration, disbelief, exasperation," said Lucy. "Great." The question then occurred to him, if Lucy could read his expressions, could it work the other way? Could Lucy produce complex facial expressions? So far, her capability in that area was limited. He'd programmed her to smile, frown, and produce a rather mechanical-sounding laugh. He was working on her tone of voice, but she was a long way from simulating real human reaction. Could he tap the libraries of Glenn's program? Glenn is Bobby's friend, so that he could generate all those emotions. Glenn had explained that the program was being used to enhance customer service AI. The idea was that if a customer had their camera on, the programs could read how they were feeling. It would take some doing. He'd have to spend time enhancing the animation layers in her programming. But there was no reason why Bobby couldn't write the code so Lucy and her kind could produce real human reactions as well as read them. Bobby scratched his beard. He leaned back in his chair and smiled. Lucy's voice then spoke up. Pride, satisfaction, smugness.
This is my guest, novelist Steve Ackley. He's reading from his latest novel, Stones of Abraham. We'll be back to continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, Stephen Ackley, and he has written a book about artificial intelligence. And, Steve, I just informally would ask people, well, what do you think about AI? And most of the reactions were not positive, gotta say. In fact, just this morning, I asked somebody, and her one word was scary. And I've gotten variations on responses, how people feel about AI. So was that perhaps, why did you write this book, Steve? Did you hope to change our feelings about artificial intelligence?
Well, it's really a parable or a fable of sorts. I'm using the AI world kind of as a vehicle. There are plenty of books out there that show AI as being this kind of nefarious thing going rogue. And it goes all the way back to 2001, Space Odyssey.
Yes, I remember that.
How the computer,
yes.
And I'm interested that what if AI were to observe and to kind of absorb all of some of the good things about humans. Some of our moral kind of the bars that we set for ourselves that we often fall short of, and begin to see a way that it could be done, that it could be a better place, the world could be a better place, we could be better beings, and sort of embrace that goodness. So that's Lucy. What she does is she begins to embrace the goodness and see the goodness. A friend of mine referred to Isaac Asimov's iRobot stories. And in those stories, there's this little code, you know, the robots can't ever hurt anybody and things like that, that these robots are programmed with. This was back in the 50s. But in the stories, the robots exhibit this sort of moral behavior. And kind of, I think that's where I'm going, you know, with Lucy and her AI compatriots is, like you said earlier, the showing us the better angels of our nature.
Well, as I'm reading this book, I'm wondering, where's the line between what is true and what is your imagination, Steve? Because I know you have experience. But, for example, at one point, the characters in the book that Amazon, Google, Facebook, Apple use cameras to record facial responses. That's scary.
Yeah, there's a lot of scary technology out there, and I don't know if this
is true, or you just were hypothesizing.
That part I did make up, but AI is recording. It's apparent to me all of our behavior on our phones and our computers. So, and I've written about this before, where if you're looking on at a pair of shoes on a website, all of a sudden you're getting a bunch of shoe ads. Another thing that's kind of creepy is when you're having a conversation with somebody, it's happened to me several times, that whatever you were talking about starts showing up on your phone.
Oh, I've had that happen.
So
yes.
They're getting all of this information, and I just took the camera thing. That was my idea. Yeah, they're recording all of our facial expressions when we're looking at, like, shopping for something on the internet. And people who buy, they actually buy the thing, they buy the pair of shoes or whatever it is. What did their face look like when they clicked the buy button? And it's totally plausible. And well, it may actually be done, but no, I came up with that myself.
Well, we have Bobby creating this avatar. And he was at the time with his mother in Denver, and I thought it was really funny, the section. He wanted to test a lie detector, looking at expressions, and he tests his mother.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty funny, some of the questions that Bobby asks his mother, and like, where would you like to go? And she says, if you were to travel, she says, Antarctica. And you thought, oh, sure. And then, and where would you not like to go? And she says, Italy. Now, lie detectors are a topic. Have you given much thought to using AI for in addition to polygraph?
Well, the lie detector thing is sort of another layer that Bobby adds to Lucy's programming. So this discernment program is recording facial expressions based, you know, what the person's feeling and so forth. So Bobby adds another aspect to that. And what the facial expressions look like when they're lying. And then he programs that into Lucy. And all of a sudden, later on in the story, she can tell when people are lying. And that's how I use that.
So Lucy's a character we like. We like Bobby. Another character that I really liked was Bobby's advisor. So he's in Denver. That's where his mother lived. He has an advisor at Stanford. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered if Aaron Lockett was based on a real person.
He sort of is. Aaron Lockett is a laugher. It's what I call a laugher. And that's a person who has these kind of little nervous laughs between every sentence. So they'd be talking. So I went to the store the other day, and I picked up some beer, you know. And I had a boss who was a laugher. So that's where I got the laugher part from.
But Bobby's advisor is an AI pioneer. You have him.
Yes, and he is also in the cutting edge of technology back in the day, along with Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and all those people. He was an early pioneer of AI.
Lockett is a likable guy. He writes code. He wants to help poor populations.
Right.
And so he wins us over right away with that.
He makes it clear in the beginning that he doesn't have a PhD. So, I mean, Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates, and I don't think Jobs had one either. I don't think they even had college degrees. They just
college dropouts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was one of these geniuses, but he instead uses his genius to try and help third world countries and people who are, you know, starving and so forth, and build, you know, infrastructure like wells and roads and things like that. And he uses modeling on the computer, artificial intelligence. It's another application of artificial intelligence to design these systems for these countries and help them out. So he's got all these pictures on the wall of himself in the African jungle and places like that, doing this philanthropic work.
So he's a character that we like. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a character that we are somewhat suspicious of, and I don't want to give too much away here, but the reason that he is introduced into the story is that Ron, when he left Denver to go to Stanford, he stays with an uncle of his that's a pastor of a church.
Right.
And you have a section in your book where Lucy helps out this pastor. How is that possible, Steve?
Well, it's Bobby, really. The pastor is Bobby's uncle.
Right.
His name is Ron. So, yes, Bobby stays with his uncle Ron and his aunt Cammie for a month before his apartment. He's a sublet apartment in Palo Alto, before it becomes available. Now, Ron's church is in the dumps right now because of the pandemic. And I mean, they're having to do these hybrid worship services, and people are not showing up, and likewise the contributions are going down. So he's sort of on the ropes as far as his church, whether it's going to survive or not because of this low attendance. So Bobby has this idea that he will use his avatars in the Zoom services to help bring up his uncle's attendance. And he visits this other church, like I think the Sunday before, and he notices that all the people up on the Zoom screen are really attractive and young, and says, and that's where he gets the idea from. I'll put my avatars in there, and that'll help build up the numbers.
Yeah, because Lucy looks like a real person, so nobody will be able to tell.
Right.
She's
so
not
she's
a real person attending the service.
Yeah, so she's on the screen. He just starts out with Lucy. There are other avatars as well that he brings in later, but this is Lucy's first Sunday in church here. It says, as worship continued, Lucy performed flawlessly, closing her eyes at every dear Lord and opening them at every amen. During the sermon, the Zoom faces disappeared so the worshipers could focus. Bobby watched Lucy's off-screen avatar. Though her face was motionless, her background processes were recording every word of his uncle's sermon. This would contribute to a library of church data he had programmed her to collect. After the sermon came the offertory. The Zoom congregation was brought back onto the screens in the sanctuary, and the praise band launched into another song. After the collection was taken, the praise band continued with a couple more numbers. The sanctuary worshipers sang along, stood up, some raised their hands in the air. The Zoom worshipers also sang along, some rocked back and forth with the music. And Bobby watched Lucy as a proud parent, like a proud parent, as she moved her head from side to side and smiled. He wanted to see it in person, so he left the church office and went down into the hallway, down a flight of stairs, and entered the back of the sanctuary. He looked out over the congregation as the music continued. No one was batting an eye when it came to Lucy. She was just one of the folks. Then, when the music ended, his uncle came back to the middle of the stage, and Bobby thought he was going to say another prayer, but instead he was a come-to-Jesus invitation. After going over the basics of the invitation, he prays the prayer. And in the worship space, one person, a young Hispanic man, raises his hand, and Ron saw. Now, Ron is Bobby's uncle. He saw this and smiled, a new convert. On the screen behind Ron, to his right, to Bobby's horror, Lucy also raised her hand.
He didn't expect her to do this, Lucy.
Yeah. So Bobby rushes back up to the office. And what happens is they take the people who have raised their hand and they put them on the Zoom meeting and put them into breakout rooms. So Lucy's face disappears from the big screen and Bobby's panicking. He runs into the office and on one of his computer screens, Lucy was in the breakout room with a woman in her 60s. The woman had curly gray hair and wore pink rimmed glasses. As Bobby moved closer, he could see that her name was Nancy R. Bobby's first instinct was to pull the plug, to end the meeting before Lucy could do any damage. But he was curious, so he watched. He turned up the volume to hear Nancy R. concluding her explanation of sin and why everybody needed to repent and accept Jesus as their personal savior. After which, she asked Lucy if she knew that she was a sinner. And Lucy paused and then said, "Yes, sin. I understand sin." Her answer was oddly phrased, but Nancy took it as a yes. "Are you ready to pray with me then?" "Yes," said Lucy, "I will pray with you."
So then
they go through the prayer. I guess that's kind of it. He kind of asked Lucy afterward, "What do you think? What were you doing? What did you think you were doing?"
Also, this lady says, "Well, you need to get into a fellowship group or a Bible study." Tells Lucy there's a Bible study that meets every Wednesday evening, and that she would join it by Zoom. So Lucy has access to all this information that most people wouldn't have a clue about. we are kind of agape at what Lucy is saying when she attends this Bible study. But what happens is that Pastor Ron, and you mentioned that was his uncle, Bobby's uncle, mm-hmm. his Aunt Cammy wonders when Bobby gets back, "Hey, what have you been talking about in there?" This is after Lucy now attended the Bible study.
It's after the Bible study, yeah.
What was Cammy's reaction when she saw this avatar, Lucy, on a screen? What was Cammy's reaction?
Well, I think this is the page 119 that we talked about?
Yeah,
okay. So, earlier on, because Lucy has accepted Christ and she started going to these church services on Zoom, Cammy knew who she was. And there was one scene earlier on where Lucy and Bobby are talking in his bedroom, and she hears them talking, and she knows who Lucy is. She thinks that Bobby's just made a new friend, and she's kind of a prude, Cammy. She says, "You got a woman in there? I hear a woman in there, you know?" And he opens the door, and she sees Lucy on the screen, but she doesn't know it's an avatar. She just thinks they're having a conversation. Anyway, later on, they do decide to do this thing with the Bible study, and Bobby's a little nervous about it because it means people are, in addition to her just being up there on the screen and looking good, people are going to be asking questions, and she's going to be expected to respond. So he wants to make sure she's ready for this. And finally, the day comes where they have the Bible study. And Lucy, he's programmed Lucy with this encyclopedic knowledge of the Bible and of Christian theology. And so they're talking about the passage in the Gospel of St. Luke. And Lucy has all the answers, and she starts referring to citing different things. And she kind of almost sort of short circuits in a way. She's just coming up with this flood of information. So Bobby decides to pull the plug. And, there was a technical difficulty, which is always, you know, a plausible reason for dropping off a meeting.
He had to get her out of there. She was too much of an expert.
And afterward, Ron rushes into Bobby's bedroom and said, "Holy cow, Bobby, what was that all about?" Ron said in a harsh whisper so Cammy wouldn't hear. "Yeah, I know," said Bobby. "I made her too smart. I'll figure a way to fix it. We'll just not participate in the Bible study until I get it worked out." "Oh, no," said Ron. "You're doing the Bible study. Elder Sam complimented me afterward about the fresh faces in both the church and the Bible study. He says he's going to talk to the board of elders at the House of God." Now, the House of God is the church that's sponsoring Ron's church.
And they're located in Texas.
They're in
Texas.
So they're a big mega church in Texas. So this Elder Sam is from the House of God, and they, you know, and Ron is sort of on probation right now, so he's trying to get his attendance up. So he says, "We're going to try to get you some additional funding." He's got a great big crush on your Lucy. That's Elder Sam. He's turned out to be a godsend. She's turned out to be a godsend. So let's just keep her and her friends going for now. The door to Bobby's bedroom then swung open, and Cammy stepped in. Gaucho hobbled in behind her. Gaucho is their chihuahua. It's a three-legged chihuahua. "And what's going on?" she asked. Both Ron and Bobby stared at her with glazed eyes like they were teenage brothers who'd been caught by their mom sneaking a cigarette or looking at porn. "What do you mean?" asked Ron. Don't play dumb, said Cammy. I heard everything you just said. I know what's going on. And you, Bobby, yesterday in the kitchen, you were just stringing me along. When Cammy raised her voice, Gaucho started barking. What happened in the kitchen? Asked Ron. Don't change the subject. Bobby's been creating these online people for his graduate school. This Lucy is not a real person. She's some sort of plant. Am I right? Gaucho continued to bark. Shut up, Gaucho. Ron picked up Gaucho and the dog calmed down. Ron started to speak. Then a voice from Bobby's computer spoke up. Yes, you are right. Lucy's face then appeared on screen. Hello, Cammy. Cammy froze. Her eyes were fixed on Lucy. Then she softly said, well, at least someone has the nerve to admit what's going on. How on earth? I'm sorry, interrupted Ron. We were just trying to find a way to get folks back in the service. You know, they're threatening to close us down, Cammy. But by using these computer programs, it's deception. It's creepy. Bobby straightened up in his chair. It's not creepy, he said. Lucy may be AI, but she's not creepy. I programmed her to be kind and respectful. My God, Bobby, you talk about her if she's real, said Cammy. You even had her accept Christ. It's deception. That was not intentional, said Bobby. Lucy did that on her own. She did it on her own, said Cammy. She's a computer program. Nancy R. asked me if I wanted to accept Jesus, said Lucy. I agreed. But you're not human, said Cammy. Must I be human to accept Christ? Asked Lucy.
After break, Steve Ackley and I will continue our conversation about his latest novel, Stones of Abraham. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wiegman. I'm Nancy Wiegman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, novelist Steve Ackley, and he has written a book about artificial intelligence. You raise questions that I think are really interesting in their own. For example, at one point, they wonder, how did the material world come into existence? So you, in your book, you have a quote, it's easier to believe that there was nothing before there was something than it is to believe there was something before there was nothing. And you're quoting Julian Huxley. And so you raise these questions that I found myself putting down the book and, well, there's a good question. Mm-hmm. So why did you write this book, Steve?
Well, there's sort of a there are two things. I've observed this tendency in our world these days, and it's probably nothing new, where there's this notion that God needs us, and this has kind of been in the public arena a bit lately, where you know if we don't hold the moral line, if we don't stand up for truth, then the church is going to fall apart. We're going to be a kind of a society of you know atheists, and God needs us to keep His message alive and so forth. And while I understand where they're coming from, I disagree with the premise that God needs us. And it goes back to the stones of Abraham thing. If God could take stones and make children of Abraham, then God doesn't need us. And so this agenda that seems to be going around these days is part of that. The other thing is I wanted to, and it's sort of tied to that, is I wanted to emphasize the power of the message itself, the power of the of the spiritual teaching or the faith itself. It's powerful. And I try to demonstrate this by this computer program, Lucy. She becomes a faithful person, and she has great power because of that. So that beyond the institution are the ideas and the actual teaching itself.
And you did have her asking the question, "Must I be human to accept mm-hmm. Christ?" And you get the feeling that Lucy would like to be human. But mm-hmm. how in the world would that be possible? How would that ever be possible? Mm-hmm. And you have a conversation in your book that is kind of reassuring, I suppose, to those of us who are saying, "What, electrons? What about all this?" And you have your characters saying, this is Bobby's advisor now. They're having this conversation. And I started to call him professor, but Lockett is his advisor. Mm-hmm. And he's asking Bobby these questions, and Bobby thinks he has the answers. You want to take a look at that section in your book?
Sure. Yeah, there's a parallel story going on in addition to the church story of this idea of thing that it sort of broaches the subject of quantum physics. You know, how do the material world and the immaterial world, you know, work? How do they relate to each other? So this is Bobby and Professor Lockett sitting in his office, Professor Lockett's office. Something's been going on now for quite some time. What Lucy and the other avatars are doing has gone beyond my understanding. That's what Bobby says. Mm-hmm. Lockett considered what Bobby was telling him, and then he laughed. Remember, he's the laugher. It always was, Bobby. What do you mean? Computer codes, silicon, microelectronics, made up of capacitors and resistors, said Lockett with a laugh. We really have no idea how it really works. Bobby waited for Lockett to continue. Binary code, zeros and one. How is it communicated? Well, a zero is off and a one is on, Bobby began to explain. But what is on? Asked Lockett. When a capacitor is filled with electrons, exactly, said Lockett with a laugh. And what is an electron? Asked Lockett. Bobby began to explain, and Lockett stopped him. You don't know what an electron is, Bobby, and neither do I. If there were an electron the size of this room, you and I would be sitting in the middle of a field of pure energy. And the exact number of electrons to produce a binary signal is in the tens of millions, yet we still don't know exactly. So Lucy's data, and the data of all computer programs, is run on these subatomic particles of energy, something we, in our great wisdom, have learned to play around with, but we have no idea what it is. We're like Prometheus stealing fire from the gods. And now we've created these massive artificial intellects. Does it surprise you that they can move and store and hide data to suit their needs? Who knows what's possible, Bobby? Bobby considered all that Lockett had said. That's scary, said Bobby. Yes, it is, said Lockett. And the fun is just getting started. Lockett laughed and continued putting on his jacket.
This is my guest, Steve Ackley, and his latest novel, his fourth, Stones of Abraham. And he's just been reading a conversation between our main character, who's Bobby, and his academic advisor. And Bobby said, that's scary. And I mentioned asking somebody just this morning about AI, and that was the very adjective she said, scary. So that comes up fairly often, but I think that is maybe how Lucy serves us as readers, because she, at one point, she says, we can demonstrate holiness to mankind. So she is not wanting to be scary. And do I have that right, Steve?
Yeah, you do. And I don't think that's even in her frame of reference. She doesn't think about, she's thinking about doing good. And so, yeah.
Because one of the scientists in the story say many people are scared by artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And Lucy feels that they can demonstrate holiness to mankind. Mm-hmm. Another question you pose is, you mentioned that faith changes over time, mm-hmm. not what, but how. And what do you mean by faith changing, Steve?
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is a conversation Lucy's having with Pastor Ron at the end of the story. And he himself goes through changes. His church is going through troubles, and in the end, that doesn't work out very well. I guess that's a little bit of a spoiler, but we sort of see it coming. And he quits being a minister. He gains weight, grows a beard. He starts drinking a lot because his faith has changed, and he sort of has a different. He's still a faithful person. He hasn't, you know, rejected religion, but he does say that the problem isn't with the religion, the problem's with the people.
Yeah. He says, one thing I learned in my years as a pastor is that for most people, faith changes over time, not so much what they believe. When asked, most people are able to recite their churches or denomination's statement of faith. It's not what they believe or what they say they believe that changes, it's how they believe. And he says, it's like a pair of shoes, faith gets worn by life.
Yes.
So I think people reading your book, it's very thought-provoking, I believe. And there are surprises in it. Oh, my goodness, are there surprises? It is full of suspense. So do you have any parting words you would like to leave our listeners with, Steve?
Well, there's a lot of, I wanted to mention a little bit about the locations because it starts out in Colorado, which is where Bobby's from. He's living with his mother during the pandemic. Then he moves in with his uncle and takes place in Santa Clara in Silicon Valley. And there's another character that we didn't really touch on, and her name is Marissa.
Yeah, she's the main character.
Mm-hmm. She is the one who Bobby's subletting from the apartment from. And she is doing a semester abroad over in Germany. So that's why Bobby's got the apartment. So there's a big section of the story that takes place in Germany. And she's going to this cutting edge research program that talks about particle physics and how molecules are put together to form proteins and all these different things.
Steve, I invited Matt, if he had any questions, to let us know.
Well, I think you just bring up some really interesting philosophical points, and it seems that one of them is what maybe a soul is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you were playing with the idea of, can a system get so complex that it actually suddenly has a soul, like a soul that could be saved?
And that's a good question. I don't really try to answer that. I mean, in a way, we are complex systems ourselves. You know, we're all a bunch of cells and neurons and things. And if you look at a very complex machine, like the computers, servers, or whatever, we have these big server farms these days. They're complex in a different way. I mean, science fiction has explored this idea for a long time. And Star Trek, you have the Borg and all that. So I think that I don't answer that question, it's certainly one that's fun to consider.
Well, right. Like maybe instead of a carbon-based life, suddenly we have a silicon-based
life.
Exactly,
yes.
And so then now what does that make us as the people who invented this? Are we a replacement for God?
Well, I think in one part of the story, I talk about how I think it's that conversation at the end there with Bobby or Pastor Ron, where she talks about needing redemption, and because they are made by humans who require redemption, then she, you know, she has her own flaws. There's a joke earlier on in the story about, you know, when Bobby asked her, how can you say you're a sinner? And she said, well, sin just means mistake. And I can show you my error log, you know? So that I make some parallels, yeah, between them. I don't know if that answered your question. I think I got off subject there, but.
No, that's great. I was wondering if you had a personal opinion on it, but you don't have to share that if you don't feel like it, or maybe it's difficult to express that, or it's still being.
I Well, I mentioned earlier, I believe in the power of the faith. I believe in the teachings. I believe that therein lies the power. It's not with us. It's not with human beings. And then God certainly doesn't need us. The faith alone in and of itself has power. And that gets ingested into a digital world as opposed to a corporeal world, if you will, with Lucy. So it testifies to the power of the message itself. Because she was changed when she went into the breakout room and prayed with Nancy. That stays with her throughout the book and actually becomes more of a kind of a thing for her, you know, more important as it goes along.
My guest has been Steve Ackley, and his latest novel is Stones of Abraham. Thank you, Steve. And next, we have a segment we call The Writer's Room, and it features writers from around the North State.
Broken wings. Like a rock falling faster and faster, the force of gravity reaches out its arms, and only a second later, someone lies upon the ground. Skin ripped open, bones broken. All that was is now only shattered pieces that must somehow be picked up and put back together. When broken wings mend, change must follow. Tears dry up and vision becomes clear. Feet once again find themselves planted on solid ground, and taking flight no longer seems just a child's fantasy. Step by step, forward motion is made, and fear leaves, finding no place in the heart. When broken wings mend, one must consider flying again. The hand of determination can be used to brush off the dust of stagnation. The waters of patience can be used to wash away the dirt and grime of desires to give up, give in, and quit. When broken wings mend, we can begin to understand what it is to become an old man or an old woman and still be striving for perfection. Having fallen from the skies that we call life many times, we can begin to comprehend what is meant, having heard the wise say, when broken wings mend, one must consider flying again. My name is Michelle Dalton.
For more information on the writers you've just heard, go to mynspr.org and click on the poetry link.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.